intro or just a dumb intro? I can't think of a good intro for Adamant.
I can't either. We should probably just start talking about Adamant.
Okay. Well, welcome to Offbeat Tracks episode 8.
Yeah, episode 8.
Lost count. We are talking about Adamant's strip album today. I am Danielle.
I'm Max. Hello.
I almost forgot to introduce ourselves there. If you're listening, you know who we are.
Yes. By now, I would hope so. And if you're new, hey, welcome. Thanks for listening to us.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just a psycho Adamant fan.
There are a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Anytime I mention Adamant on Twitter, I've got like 40 people come and favorite it. I'm like,
you get a lot more interesting people in your Twitter mentions than I do. That's true. You do tweet a lot more than I do.
I do tweet a lot.
But that's not the first time you brought this up, that like weird people say things to you on Twitter.
You have to really watch. There are certain elements of the people of people in the world who are name searchers.
Yes.
Adamant fans are name searchers.
They have the Adamant hashtag search saved.
Yeah, I don't even hashtag it. They're just like, this girl's talking about Adamant and we're going to favorite it. Yeah, they are name searchers, which is why I love them.
You know, my one experience with that, like, a long time ago, like 10 years ago, when I first started blogging about music, I wrote about a Danny Elfman song that I liked.
Nice.
And I found myself like a few days later on some Danny Elfman forum, like, look at this uninformed person. Cause I like hadn't like, I hadn't like given it like
and
this.
And you said something positive about it and they still hated you?
Yeah, but I hadn't, I guess, like said that it was the greatest album of all time. So they were very, this Danny Elfman message board was very angry with me.
Oh my God.
But you know,
that's I've not the internet. Checked message boards for my name. I'm sure that one time I tweeted to the Pope, I ended up on a very interesting message board. That was like 3 days of mentions. It was
right. Oof. And now the Pope has Twitter, so he can tweet you back himself.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to have a scummy message board to do it for him.
No, he doesn't tweet back, but his friends do.
So this episode idea was actually yours, Danielle.
Yes.
And why this album? Why specifically Strip? Why are we talking about this today?
Specifically, well, generally, I love Adamant. I think he's one of the sexiest men on the planet with the sexiest music. And I'm very, very biased in that. And you will see that during this podcast. I will not be objective. And
the bone vest gave you a boner?
Yes. Go big or go home. So the Strip album, Adamant was a huge star, particularly in the UK, but also in the US. He had big hits here too.
He did, and that's definitely worth noting. His first, Strip was his fifth album.
Yes.
And his first four albums, I could not believe this when I looked this up, but his first four albums all went at least gold.
Really?
Yeah.
Even the first one?
Yeah, even the first one was, and this is like UK or US, I'm saying.
Oh, okay, yeah, UK, he was huge.
But first four went at least gold. The Kings of the Wild Frontier and Prince Charming both went platinum in the UK.
Wow, yeah.
So yes, he was...
Kings of the Wild Frontier is a masterpiece,
he was,
by the way.
Huge.
Yeah, Kings of the Wild Frontier is a masterpiece. And right now, he's actually, this is just an aside, right now he's on tour in England, and I want to be there very badly, because his set right now that he's doing...
Like as we're recording this right now, he's on tour?
Yeah, he's like doing sporadic shows. I think the next one's in December, and I want to go very badly.
If you would like to
donate to this podcast, that money can go to this, and then I will talk to you about it incessantly. Anyway, December, he's doing a set that is just the Kings of the Wild Frontier album from front to back.
Wow.
Right.
So
if you're in England, go see it, because it's going to be awesome. I don't think it's sold out yet. Like, what's wrong with you, England?
Several years ago, I got to go see one of my favorite bands, Freeze Pop.
Yeah.
And they did a set like that. They played their entire first album. That is a very cool thing. If you ever get the chance...
I think a lot of bands are doing that
now. Yeah.
Huey Lewis has been doing that.
If you get
sports.
The chance to see a band do that, I mean, especially with a classic album like Freeze Pop's first album, or like this Kings of the Wild Frontier, or Sports, this is... Yeah, it's a really, really cool thing, because it's like, it's almost like you're watching the process of the band writing the album. You can see how it all flows together, and you can see how... you know, they put it together creatively. It's just, it's a very, very cool thing to watch.
Yeah, it's so cool. So he's doing that right now. That was a huge album, and it's a masterpiece, if you ask me. Kings of the Wild Frontier as a song is maybe the sexiest song ever written. I don't know what it is. It's not sexy in subject, but it sounds the sexiest ever.
We should note, by the way, that song was not a big hit for him.
No, Kings it wasn't. Frontier. But that is a very sexy song.
He did Dog Eat Dog and Ant Music, though, were also on that album, and those were big hits in the UK for him. Not so much. They were like U.S. college radio kind of thing, because college radio was first becoming a thing around when that album came out in the early 80s.
Yeah, I mean, Adamant comes up in this like new romantic era, even though he claimed that he's not a new romantic.
He's totally a new romantic.
He's like the new romantic. Yeah. But I think part of being like a true new romantic... is saying you're not one.
That's kind of true.
Yeah. You know, he comes from the punk days, too. Like, he was around at the beginning of punk.
Yes.
He was the headliner. He was his band Bazooka Joe. He was in that band for a hot minute. But he was the headliner of the Sex Pistols' first show.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. How cool is that? In like 75. And then he left the band like right after it because the other guys hated Sex Pistols and he thought they were awesome. And then they got into a fight and then he left the band. So, yeah, he grew up in the punk scene, kind of switched to this new thing that I guess he thought was super, you know, cool and unique. But really, everyone was kind of doing this weird New Romantics thing.
I am totally with you on the New Romantics thing. Mm-hmm. The label that I've always sort of rejected for Adamant is New Wave. I understand why he was lumped in like with bands who were really doing the new wave thing like Romeo Void, because sonically I think you can sort of link his music to Romeo Void, but Romeo Void's stuff was so, it took post-punk and this, it kind of created that idea of no wave. Have you ever heard that term?
I love no wave.
Okay, yeah. So that was like Romeo Void like took the punk thing and then ran with it into a different place. Adam Ant, I think, sort of just extended punk music and kind of blended it with New Romanticism. I never really thought it was new wave, but people really kind of think of him as like this, this pinnacle of new wave. So I totally recognize I'm in the minority on that, but I always had a problem linking him to the new wave movement specifically.
I give you that, yeah, sonically. And I always thought he was very different. His music has a lot of humor to it. It's got a lot of kitsch.
Yes.
His music is like, everything he sings just always has that kind of weird, quirky
humor. Kitsch is a great word for it.
Yeah, and he dressed that way. Of course, that's a big New Romantic thing, is kind of a kitsch.
There's a lot of, I think I used this word in the Sly Fox episode when we were talking about ICP, but pageantry. There's a lot of pageantry about Adam Ant's music.
Oh, yeah.
So let's bring it into talking about this album specifically.
Okay, so you've got Adam Ant, who's pretty huge up into this time, especially in the UK, but even in the US, he's having successful tours. So this is like late 82, early 83, he's recording this new album, which is Strip.
Yes.
So this guy is on top of the world at this moment. He's also kind of old at this point. Like, I think he's like 30, I don't know what year he was born. He's 61 now, so I guess.
Yeah, he was born 54, I just looked. So he would have been like 39 when this was coming out, yeah.
No, wait. He would have been
29. Excuse me.
29.
Bad math.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, that doesn't feel right.
No, yeah. 29. He was getting old by like teen idol musical standards,
exactly.
You're saying. Yes.
Exactly. So that'll come in handy later when I say something.
Okay.
I'm setting up a thing for later. So he's recording this thing in Stockholm. He's working with some pretty cool names. That I would love to see.
One of my all-time musical faves is on this record, drumming on a few tracks.
Phil Collins?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know he was one of your all-time faves.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be like, is there another drummer I don't know
about? No, Phil is bae.
Phil is bae? You were the first person who's ever said that.
Phil is so bae. I love Phil Collins.
Well, my bae makes a little snippet on this album. Ani Fried. Linsta.
Oh, yeah. God.
ABBA.
I totally forgot. Yeah. She's in the title track.
She's in the title track of Strip.
Yes.
Yeah. He records this in Stockholm. So I'm thinking, I don't know the story of how she ended up on this album, but I'm thinking right about this time, she's got her huge, not really huge, but she's got a decent musical solo career going.
Right. Because she had the single, I Know There's Something, Know There's Going, Something On, Going Out, On, which Phil Collins also played drums on, just feeling the need to note that.
Do you think that they all recorded? I'd love to see the timing, because it's like Phil Collins is there.
Yeah.
Ani Fried is there.
Yeah, I'm sure it was all happening around the same time.
Do you think they just like all ended up in the same studio one day and they were like, let's play on each other's stuff?
Let's see. This album came out late 1983, though, and I think the Frida single was 82. I could be wrong. I'll check the year on that while you're continuing to make your point.
You have to think, too, like, when was it recorded also?
Right.
So that'll be interesting. I know Adam Ant was on tour for a lot of that before it was actually released.
I Know There's Something Going On was August of 82. So the timing is a little bit off there, but it's not entirely impossible that, you know, they had good studio chemistry. She and Phil Collins did. So it worked again. Maybe she was the reason that Phil Collins ended up on Strip. That'd be kind of cool.
Oh my God. I don't even know. But it's like, so many things inspiring. So he gets Strip. And before we go into the actual music, it doesn't do well.
No.
You got this guy who's like a huge star, and it barely makes a peep into. You got Phil Collins on it, who was bae.
Yes.
As I've heard.
Bay.
He's bay. You've got the hugest star in the UK, probably, at the time. That's, like, commercial, anyway. And yeah. He just bombs.
I mean, one of the hugest. I mean, yeah, Duran was out by then.
Duran. Another new romantic.
Yep.
Interesting one. Yeah, but I mean, it's like, it just totally bombs. And he's, like, touring like crazy to promote it.
Right.
And, like, no one's listening.
Well, I have some theories on why that is, but we can discuss that when we get into the music. So, let's talk about this title track, Strip, with Annie Fried.
Oh, yeah.
I think this song is the ultimate proof that straight men by 1983 were completely out of ideas to get women in bed.
Really?
Well, come on. Like,
it would work for me, but I love Adamant.
We're just following ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our ancestors did it, so you should take your clothes off in front of me.
It was the original.
Did that honest? Do you think that ever worked for him?
I mean, I have a feeling he got laid a lot. He dated Heather Graham in the 90s.
Did he really?
Yes, right?
That's disgusting.
It all is a little bit, but I mean, I would date him now if he wanted me to. If he like showed up on my door, and he does not look great anymore. And I would, if he showed up at my door and said, Danielle, would you like to recreate some ancient history, I would be like, I feel you know like what?
Your clothes would be off by the time you finish the sentence because you would know where
they
it
would
was
fall
going.
Off automatically. Yeah. There would be no keeping them on. Yeah, it would just be, yeah, but he dated Heather Graham in the 90s, so don't knock his ability to get a lady. He can do it. He dated Vanity.
He did.
Which I will get to, because I have a theory.
Oh, okay. Well, let's...
We'll get to that. But anyway, back to Strip. The original You and Me Baby Ain't Nothing But Mammals. So let's do it like
that's
they
a,
do.
That's a great way to put it. It is okay. Kind of the original...
But less
the original
popular.
Inspiration of that Bloodhound Gang song, yes.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the video to Strip?
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And every time he says strip, he like takes his shirt and just like uncovers his shoulder a little bit. It's the dumbest thing. And I love it.
They call that the Mormon flash.
Oh man. Yeah. It's ridiculous. But yeah, Strip. I think Strip is very catchy. It's not full out synth beauty. Like Adamant was never full on synth.
No,
but it's very
and that's
danceable.
That's actually part of why I reject his new wave label, mm-hmm. because I really think to be a true new wave band, and I'm going to get shit for saying this, I know, but I really think to be a true new wave artist, you have to have some integration of electronics into your music. I think that's part of being part of the new wave.
I can see that. I just think that there are a lot of, if you want to get super technical about it, there are just a lot of different subsects of new wave.
Oh, totally. Like you've got, like, totally.
Roxy music.
Right. Love. Right, right, right.
And you've got like...
But I think
the
that's
the new romantic side.
Like, I think that's the one common thread. I mean, even Romeo Void, who we were talking about earlier, it's subtle, but it's there. Like, you can tell they use drum machines mm-hmm. on some of their tracks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, it's not a very strict new wave album. It's very catchy. Strip is super catchy. And I don't understand why this wasn't a hit. How was it not a hit?
I kind of get why it wasn't a hit. To me,
I remember the first time I heard Strip, I was like, what is this? This is beautiful.
You talking about the album as a whole or this specific track?
This specific track.
Well, I think that this track is a pretty good benchmark for the rest of the album. And I always just sort of saw this album as like, it's like you're watching a really, really cheesy ass Broadway musical.
Really cheesy.
I mean, it's like really super, like the whole thing is like, is you can like see how the acts play out. Like this is like the opening scene where he's like chasing the woman, and like Adamant is from London. I don't think we've mentioned that yet, but he's from kind of a working class area of London, and his dad was a chauffeur. Like I was reading about mm-hmm. his parents and all this stuff, so he's kind of from the working class. And I think that he really like tries to play up that classic like 1800s like Cockney thing on this album a whole lot. I mean, like even on this track where he's like, "I am not a man." I'm like, you don't talk like that. And it's like this very cheesy like Mary Poppins kind of like, "Well, a penny for your pocket." Like, okay.
I mean, it kind of loses some of the Adamant cool, I think, that he has.
Yeah,
it's not cool.
No, it's not cool at all. at all.
Maybe that's why I love it so much. It's interesting to hear you say this because I've been like listening to this album for years and I'm so in love with it that in a way I can't be objective. So it's like, I'm just like, this is the greatest song of all time, Max. I don't know what else you can say about it.
I'm not, I don't mean to say that. There's tons of media in the world that is not cool at all that I love. And it is like 100% to be okay to be not cool and I will still love you. I just want to point that out. So, like, I'm not saying that to be pejorative to this album, but cool is not a good word for this album. Think it's cheap or a bit risque. Please don't say a word, I'll just slip away. I am not a man who believes in lies. Like an octopus with big x-ray eyes. It is not cool in any way, shape, or
form. So do you think that maybe, considering that for the last, like, you know, however many years, probably 6-7 years he's been out since then, and he's, like, the coolest dude on the planet, and then he brings this out that everyone was like, oh, my God, shut up.
I mean, kind of. Yeah, I do. I think that he kind of got lost in his own art a little bit.
The kitsch turned into cheese.
Yeah, and I think that was the vision, what I said, like, a Broadway musical. I mean, don't you? I mean, it plays out like a stage play. If you go front to back with the album, Strip is like he's chasing the woman in the beginning. And then, the next two songs are both also very flirtatious kind of songs. The Baby Let Me Scream at You and then Libertine, which Libertine is like, that's the second cheesiest track on the album, I think, behind another one that we'll get to later. But Libertine is just, it's got that punchy, like up and down, you know, it's very, very Broadway.
I've never thought of it that way. Do you think that I could write a music box musical, a little jukebox musical to
this album could
make a lot of money?
Yes, you should start tweeting that idea at him. You can steal my idea and run with it because I don't want anything to do with it. I mean, you can give me some of the proceeds if you want.
Totally. Any idea. Yeah, I might do that.
But yes, this album could very easily be made into a musical.
I see that up and down thing, and there are a lot of the tracks just in themselves are up and down. Like, there are parts of tracks I don't love that are just kind of, like, slow. And then it'll, like, the chorus will just go be this bouncy, really fun, catchy thing. And then it'll just go back down and do a lull in
I a think
way.
That the two...
Libertine's like that.
Libertine is like that. But I think the two that are most guilty of that on the album are Strip and... It's the two singles, Strip and Puss in Boots. Libertine,
both
though,
are Phil Collins produced. Yes. How do you feel about that?
Yes, I know, but that's why they were the singles. Libertine, definitely, like, the cheese factor is through the roof on Libertine.
Yeah, I don't love Libertine. I never have. I feel like I should, but I don't love Libertine. She beat the selfish nails right out of me. I love Baby Let Me Scream at You a lot.
I also enjoy Baby Let Me Scream at You. And again, like, this
Have you listened to it and noticed something referring to me on Baby Let Me Scream at You?
No, what?
My Twitter handle is from Baby Let Me Scream at You.
Oh, really?
Okay, so I'm not telling you to follow me. Don't do it. So my Twitter handle is dchilisauce because that's like similar to my name. And I was listening, and the reason, and I just decided to sign up for Twitter one day when I'm in my car, and I happened to be listening to this album, and Baby Let Me Scream at You was on, and I was like, I need a good name, because up until then it was Rock Me Mama Deus, because I was like in my early 20s, and I was into Falco and Your Mom jokes.
You're still into Falco and Your Mom jokes.
I know, but I don't need to advertise it every time I'm on the internet. So then there's a line in there that's like, give me some chili sauce.
I did not even think of that. Right? That is totally your Twitter handle. That's hilarious.
No one's ever asked me about it, like the chili sauce thing. Anyway, so I thought about it and I was like, give D some chili sauce. And then I was like, all right, I'll just put that in there. And then it's been my handle for years after that.
It works on so many levels.
I know. And yeah, most people have no idea what it's referencing. They're just like, she's just calling herself that.
Yep. I love it.
It's actually an Adam Ant Baby Let Me Scream at You reference. For all the cool people out there. But he's got knowledge nice and raw and lots of nifty chat. Baby, let me scream at you. You can be kind of coarse. I'm talking to your girlfriend. Give me some cheese sauce. We need
to talk about Vanity.
Vanity.
Because we alluded to this earlier.
Okay.
So yeah, Adamant and Vanity, who our first episode was about. If you haven't listened to our Vanity episode, go listen to it. It was our first one. I love that episode. So proud of it. We love Vanity.
Yes, we
do. R.I.P. Denise, we miss you. But yes, Adamant and Vanity were romantically linked.
Yes, and it was kind of around the time, right after she left Prince. Mm-hmm. She couldn't have dated him much later than that. Mm-mm. Because she was soon with Nikki Sixx.
Yeah, that's correct.
I don't think Vanity's a double teamer.
I don't have a good time stamp for the Vanity Sixx thing, but I know she was with Nikki Sixx, but she was with him by 1986, and this album was 3 years before that.
Yeah. So I think she probably would have had to have left Prince sometime in 83.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know. It's early, late. They would have had to have filmed.
And that was enough time for him to, like, write this song about her.
Right? It's going, like, right at the time that this was released, what, late 83?
It was recorded summer of 83 and released in November 83.
It's got to be about an American woman, mm-hmm. because there's a line that says, she said she likes the accent. She mm-hmm. thinks it's so polite.
That's, like, the hook of the song, yes.
Yeah. So, it's got to be an American or a Canadian. It's got to be someone who thinks it's an accent, and it's named Vanity. There's like some line in Space Mountain Vanity. Maybe they went to Disney. I don't know what that Space Mountain Vanity is, but maybe they went to Disney together.
That's a great mental image, like Vanity and Adamant in their full stage pageantry, like riding Space
Mountain. He's like wearing a Napoleon hat on Space Mountain.
And the bone vest. And she's like in the girdle.
She's just in her underwear.
That is and
it's,
beautiful.
But it's also 1983, so no one cares. It's just normal. That's just normal stuff. Yeah, so I think maybe, is this about Vanity? The Vanity.
Gee, couldn't imagine.
No, but I mean, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's like so obviously about Vanity. Why wouldn't it be?
But that's pretty crazy. He's never like really been calling people out before like that. And I'm telling you what, Adamant had sex with a lot of people.
People were less litigious in the 80s. You could literally write a song like, I dated a woman named Susie, and I hate that bitch now because she cheated on me. Susie wouldn't lawyer up. She would be too afraid to.
Oh my God.
Now you have to just write things like, you should go and love yourself. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. But anyway, I think Vanity was about Vanity, and I would have said it in the first episode, but I didn't even think about it. Years of like listening to this album, and mm-hmm. it was right after we recorded Vanity, and I happened to be listening to this album like I do on the weekly. And I was just like, I immediately texted Max and I was like, oh my God, is this about Vanity? Yeah. Why didn't I think about that?
I hadn't really thought about it either, but I don't listen to this album the way that you listen to this album, so it was just not on my radar.
I just love
it. Yeah, like, so obviously about Vanity.
It's so cool. I think it's so cool when there's, like, relationship gossip in music that lasts forever. I love that.
We could do a whole episode on songs about relationship gossip, I think.
Oh, my God.
That'd be a good one.
We could just do, like, a whole month of shows on that. Oh, my God, that would be great. I know that
I actually had this backwards. I just looked. I thought that Strip was the first single on this album. It wasn't.
It's Puss in Boots, I think.
Puss in Boots was the first single.
Yeah.
I don't know why I had that flipped. I thought
that was the title track out first.
Yeah. Puss in Boots. I love this song. And I mean, like, the cheese factor, again, to borrow my phrase I use for Libertine, the cheese factor is through the roof, yes, on Puss in Boots.
And the
beat is
a beat you skip to.
Yeah, but this is this is like such a Phil Collins drum track, though. I mean,
yeah.
This is so that's Phil Collins' thumbprints and other fingerprints you hold drumsticks with. All those prints are all over this song. I mean, it is like it just a cheesy, so British, like
how
so
cheesy,
British.
How cheesy is the imagery of Puss in Boots?
Right. Like, but it's so Adamant too, like, you know, uh-huh. with his little leather boots and his goofy pirate buccaneer getup, like, oh God! Like
it is
Barbie really musical good. Really writes itself. I mean, it really, really does.
But would anyone go? I think this might be a million-dollar idea. I just have to write it. Pussycat Cat has a postcard. I want the big city be nice. That's the place for the action. Gonna have a slice.
I'll meet some of them.
Yeah, Puss in Boots is a great song. I think it did chart decently. I think.
It did not in the UK. It was
what?
I'm sorry. Puss in Boots did in the UK. It was Strip that didn't do very well. Strip was like Strip peaked at 41 in the UK, which is like kind of funny. Puss in Boots was a hit in the UK. It hit number 5.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it didn't chart in the US at all.
Yeah, it barely. I think like the whole entire album just like
Strip did. Charted. Strip did chart on the Hot 100, but did not crack top 40.
Shame, 1983 America. Shame.
1983 was a kick-ass year for music, as we've talked about many times, though. So
it was a lot of transition.
That could be part of it, too. So this was up against a lot of good stuff that was out.
It was up against a lot of good stuff, and it kind of represents, I think, the like we've said it before, the transition of music to be more, less the new wavy, rocky bass and going more into the club.
Yes.
And I think this album doesn't really represent that transition.
I think we were kind of done with that transition by 85, but you're right. Mm-hmm. 83 is definitely where it started to happen. We touched on that in the Madonna episode.
Yes.
One last note before we move on about Puss in Boots. If you play the beginning of this song, the very opening where the cat meows, it will drive cats insane. I don't know if that's a real cat meow, but I always just sort of thought it was Adam Ant screwing around and making a cat meow sound, but it works. Like, my cat will whip her head around really fast if you play the beginning of that song.
I don't know that because I don't have a cat. My dog just sleeps through it, but she has no job. But I did not know that. Now I'm going to,
Yeah, try it. Playboy's
Together, Phil Collins one.
Yes, Playboy's Together, Phil Collins one. And
weird.
Playboy is the only like non-single on this album that I've ever like found myself wanting to like seek out and listen to.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't love Playboy.
I think it's a pretty good little song.
I get into it a little bit, but then that whole line, which is the cheesiest part, which is like, she's a Playboy.
That's right.
Like, it's
wait, that's what you find most, like, you find that cheese objectionable? But you can listen to, I'm not a man who believes in lies.
You know, don't question my
thank
culture.
Thank you, Dick Van Dyke.
Don't question my values and culture. I love it, I love, yeah, he's like, shake Playboy, it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, but that's the whole, I mean, come on, this album has, like, 2 drum beats. And one of them is the one in Playboy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. It's... What do you wear in bed? Some hay bones on my head. What do you like to hold? My friend, she said, he's a Playboy. You don't like the line in Strip, I'm going to go back to Strip, like like an octopus with the X-ray eyes.
Oh, yeah. That's,
you don't feel
that's
anything
badass.
From that?
It makes me think of Goon Squad, 8 Arms Don't You. The greatest music video of the 80s. Okay, we'll save that for a Goon Squad episode.
Yeah. Anyway, she's Playboy. Terrible. I don't love it, but I'll listen to it. I don't, like, skip. There's only one song on this that I skip, and I do not understand why anyone thought it was a good idea to put it on the album, and that is Montreal.
Oh, the worst.
What the hell?
I mentioned this earlier, too. I said Libertine was the second cheesiest. Montreal is the cheesiest.
Like, sometimes I re-listen to Montreal, and I don't skip it, thinking, like, maybe it's time that I get this, you know? Maybe it's just... Maybe I wasn't in the mood before. Sometimes I'm cranky and I listen to things and I don't like it. And then I listen to it later. I'm like, oh, I was just in a bad mood. No, Montreal is just
woof. Not a good song. Woof. Total woof.
On a scale of 1 to woof, it is a wolf howling.
Yeah, it is. I was going to say it's a pack of dogs barking in a junkyard somewhere while Strip is playing and Adamant is dancing, irritating the dogs with a giant sword.
I mean, that's one way to put it. Yep. Another bleak highway, soothes the morning pain away. Laid him down inside the car, busting on route not too far. Down another bleak highway, soothes the morning pain away. What has passed the night before? Navel to Neck, I think, is one of the sexiest songs ever. If you don't think it's sexy, then you do not know what sex is.
I knew this would be one of your favorites on the album. Where, like, we've never like actually had a conversation about this album before recording this episode. Yeah. So this is very interesting, but it's so funny. Like, I know her well enough that I knew Navel to Neck would be up there on your list.
Navel to Neck is sexy.
Yeah, it's Adam Ant really being Adam Ant.
It's like the most old Adam Ant song. It's
got totally
the
Burundi
beat on it, which is that African drum thing that was big on.
Totally agree. And the pageantry level is low on this one, I think.
Yeah, it's not cheesy, really. I mean, well, some of it is.
Yeah, I mean, the whole album is cheesy to a degree, but this is, like, he's not really playing up the whole, like, I'm a pirate and this is a stage play, and, you know, like, that, yeah. That aspect is not really being played up very much in this song.
Speaking of that, did you know that on the tour for this album, like, he had, you know, his band, like, always changed forever, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. It was just mostly him and, like, Marco Peroni. And then, like, the other guys would just change. But anyway, for this album, he decided to go very thematic. And
you don't say.
Like, name the rest of his band, like, stupid stuff. It was, like, him and Marco Peroni. Then he had, like, this guy whose name was something very weird, like, Wishniak or something. But he changed his name to Count Wishniak or whatever his name was. And then God the other guy had a dumb name. So if you're into the pageantry, yeah, that's what he was like. Yes, when we go on the strip tour, we're going to have this very big theme. They'll all love it. And they're like... And he comes to the U.S. and they're like, okay. Yeah, he sold tickets, but no one bought the album, which you're is like, the
yeah, buddy, we've already seen Pirates of Penzance. This is done.
Anyway, Navel to Neck, super sexy. I love the way that it builds. It's like, it starts off very simple. It's like, dum, 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 and then it's just more comes in, and then you've got like the chanting in the background. Oh, it's so hot. And who doesn't want to hear Adamant say, and I'm going to kiss you. Oh, it's hot.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hot. He's a baby boy, navel to neck. Give me your mouth, I wanna kiss you. Spanish Games, I think, yeah. Is a great song.
We did kind of fly over Spanish Games, yes.
I knew I was forgetting a big one. Well, it wasn't a big one, but it's a big one for me, because I think Spanish Games is also a hot song. It's different. It's kind of got like...
It is different. It actually does kind of stand out on this album a little bit.
It does. It's different than what Adamant normally does. Mm-hmm. It's got that kind of like orchestra thing, but it's... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's a very danceable song.
Interesting.
I think it's pretty danceable. You don't think so? I don't know. I can dance
to
anything.
You could dance to anything if you try hard enough.
I can dance navel to neck. I would like to with Adamant, actually. God, I hope he doesn't listen to this. I'll be so red in the face.
Yeah, but then you can plan your strip Broadway show tour.
Yes, we will have to work very closely. But Spanish Games is a pretty cool song. It's got a little flamenco. It's got a flamenco vibe. Like, I can totally see in my head when I hear this playing, like, a flamenco dancer, like, just twirling.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's pretty cool. It's also another sexy song, because all of his songs are pretty sexy. He has to talk about sex.
He always has to talk about sex, yes.
So hot and having sex all the time. With Vanity.
I was going to say something he and Vanity had in common.
That's very true. He did not change his ways, though. No, I don't know too much of names when there's Spanish games. You can play if you want to. Always try to look our best.
So any final thoughts on this strip album? This is clearly a big passion of yours, because the episode was your idea.
Yeah.
And I know you love this album a lot.
God, too much. I've really enjoyed show prepping for this, because it just gives me an excuse to listen to it over and over. What's very interesting, this album really marks kind of like when Adamant just starts diving. He didn't dive, but he just fades and no one cared about it anymore. It's kind of the backlash too on like the new romantic thing.
Yes.
So I actually read something about when he did Live Aid, which was 85.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time, strip has came and flopped, but he's still in the limelight. He's still doing other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Geldof. Like, you know, he's excited about Live Aid. Bob Geldof's like, okay, Adam, you can do a song. And Adam's like, yeah, I'm still a star. And he does a new song, which is Viva La Rock. If you've ever heard that album, that's also a very interesting one, because that is not Adamant at all. He is in a whole other plane of antdom. But Bob Geldof said in his book, he was like, I don't know why I let Adamant do this, because he was such an old guy at that point. He was like, he was so over the hill, and it was like terrible.
Yeah, 1985, so he's 31.
Like, I know. Give me a break. He's got, who else is in, like, who am I thinking of? The
Live Aid?
Yeah.
Well, Phil Collins. He was there.
He was at everyone.
U2.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, he was like talking about, Bob Geldof called that like the death of rock and roll, as he like knew it, like with that new romantic thing. You've got U2. I don't think he cared for U2. I don't know if he really cared for Phil Collins. He liked, you know, he liked all the old stuff.
I could see Geldof and Collins not getting along.
Yeah, Geldof didn't care about that. you know, Geldof was very old school.
He was.
Hence by the new romantic, Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yes.
Which we should definitely.
So that's where Adamant would go next. And he's, I mean, he's still out there doing it, like you said. He's
I saw him on tour 3 years ago. I saw him on tour 3 years ago. I, you know, pushed my way up to front row center.
How was the show?
And oh my god, it was awesome. He is a little.
Is he still doing the pageantry? I mean, is he still wearing the bone vests? And...
In 2013, he was. Yes, he was like in full gear.
Good for him.
And he like he can still move in his adamant ways, and you know he sounds good live. He had a good band. Like it was awesome. It was me. I was like 28 at the time, with like a room full of 50-year-olds. It was
right. That was me when I saw Yaz in 2008. Yeah.
You saw them in 2008.
I did. Summer 08.
Going to jump across the table and strangle you. I'm so jealous. but yeah, Adamant was pretty cool show. So if you get to see him, definitely do it. He was, as of 3 years ago, still very awesome. And he's doing Kings of the Wall Frontier in London. And you should buy me a ticket and send me there.
Well, with that, if you want to buy Danielle a ticket or otherwise, just tell us your thoughts on Adamant or anything else, including maybe what shows you would like to hear us do. Contact us on our website, offbeattrackscast.com.
Yeah, our email's on there. We are also on Twitter @offbeattracks.
Yeah, so for now, I'm Max.
I'm Danielle.
See ya.